The six men, including the prodigals Bo and Scratch, left Encinal's together, mounted up, and rode through the streets of El Paso toward the wagon yard where the rest of Davidson's men would be waiting. As Bo and the others rode up to the wagon yard, Bo saw that Wallace had bought some more mules to replace the ones killed by the bandits. The teams were already hitched to the wagons, which weren't completely empty. Some supplies had been loaded into them.
Didn't expect to see you again. Thought you decided not to work for the boss after all and lit a shuck.
Nope. We were still keeping an eye on you boys, like guardian angels.
Scruffiest old angels I ever saw. Where the hell are Jackman and Trag?
Haven't seen them.
We can't sit around here all day waiting for them. We need to get back to the mine as soon as we can. I thought I'd made that clear to all of you.
There you go again. Sound like you think you're the boss.
We'll have to leave without them if they don't show up in the next couple of minutes.
Fine by me either way.
For all we know, they've got themselves into some sort of drunken brawl and may be in jail or dead.
Well, let's get started then.
Wallace climbed onto the driver's seat of the lead wagon and unwound the reins from the brake lever. The other drivers did likewise. The outriders swung up into their saddles. The sun was just peeking over the eastern horizon when the wagons rolled across the bridge over the Rio Grande, headed back to Cutthroat Canyon. The trip south through Mexico was uneventful. They saw no sign of the men who had been with Teresa at the Mesa, those who had survived the battle and fled. Skinner and the others were surprised that Jackman and Trag hadn't followed them from El Paso and caught up to them, but they didn't seem worried about it. A few hours later, the group camped the first night on the trail.
Yeah, I know that Davidson advanced Jackman and Trag some money against their wages, but not much. If they want to give up the job, it's their loss. You know, after killing as many of those bandits as we did yesterday, I'm not sure the rest of them will ever give us any more trouble.
While Davidson's group was camped, Bo tried to sound out Lancaster, Hansen, and Douglas about how far they would go for Davidson, all in the guise of idle conversation, but he didn't get very far, especially with the taciturn youngster. None of them gave any indication that they would be willing to turn on their employer as long as he continued paying them. The lightly loaded wagons moved faster than they had when they were full of the heavy gold ore. Because of that, an hour or more of daylight remained on the second day when they rolled into the valley. Bo and Scratch glanced at the church's bell tower, then at each other. They knew one of Davidson's marksmen was up there, watching the wagons and the accompanying riders through field glasses. The villagers stayed out of sight as the wagons rolled through. By the time they reached the mouth of the steep-sided canyon, shadows were starting to gather, despite the fact that the sun was still up. Davidson was waiting for them when they got to the mine.
I'm glad to see that you're back. You got the ore through all right?
We did. Turned it over to the express agent for shipment on the train coming through that very evening.
Excellent work. Any trouble? Wait a minute. Jackman and Trag aren't with you. Were you attacked? Were they killed?
Yes to your first question, no to the second. Those bandits jumped us again on the second day out. They had an ambush prepared for the wagons. But your plan worked, boss. Skinner and the others came charging in and took them by surprise. We killed five of the bastards, and the others gave up and ran off.
By God, I'm glad to hear that. Was anyone hurt?
I got a bullet crease on my side, and a couple of other fellers picked up a nick or two, but the only ones hurt bad were those five banditos who wound up dead.
Then where are Jackman and Trag?
They went off to corral somewhere in El Paso or Juarez. They never came back.
They just quit?
Don't know. Like I said, we never saw them after we split up in El Paso. You didn't tell us to stay together while we were there.
Maybe I should have. If you're not capable of keeping up with the men who work for me.
Yeah, I reckon we need to have a talk about that, boss. These two ran out on us.
I don't understand. Creel and Morton are here. How could they have run out?
Skinner's talking about the fact that Scratch and I stopped at the scene of that ambush long enough to check the bodies of the bandits who were killed. And then we followed the wagons on to El Paso, staying far enough back so that we wouldn't be spotted if the bandits who lived through the fight tried to attack again.
That's your story anyway. You don't have a lick of proof for it.
And you don't have any proof that I'm not telling the truth. We found the other fellas once we got to El Paso and rode back down here with them. Now to me, it seems like Scratch and I did our jobs. We helped fight off those banditos and the ore made it to El Paso, What more could anybody want?
Why did you go to the time and trouble of checking on those bandits? You weren't going to help any of them that were just wounded, were you? Those men are my enemies.
No, they weren't men. They were more like boys.
Well, what the hell does that matter? They take up arms against me. They deserve whatever happens to them.
Damn right.
Look, I'm paying you good wages to defend my interests from anyone who threatens them. If that doesn't sit well with you, you're free to ride away anytime you want.
Well, fact of the matter is, we haven't collected any wages yet. Some of the other fellows asked for advances, but Bo and me didn't.
Are you saying you want to draw your time?
That is not what I'm saying at all. Look, this is getting blown up into something bigger than it is. Yeah, it bothered us a little that those dead bandits were as young as they were. And to tell you the truth, we thought about staying there long enough to bury them. But we didn't. We went on to El Paso, keeping an eye on the wagons along the way, just like we were supposed to. Skinner and the others might not have seen us, but that doesn't mean we weren't there. And nobody said anything about quitting. If those youngsters didn't want to get shot, they shouldn't have tried to steal that gold. Simple as that, and nobody's arguing it.
How about it?
I still wouldn't trust them if I was you, boss.
I would.
You would?
Sure. The only real trouble we had, they were right there fighting beside us. They may be a mite older, but they still got the bark on. That's the sort of man I want back in any play I make.
Well, thank you, kid.
What about you two?
Well, I got no trouble with Creel and Morton.
They seem like splendid chaps to me.
All right, Dan. It's settled. I know you don't like them, Skinner, but just steer clear of them while you're here at the mine. The money I'm paying, you can stand to put up with them during the trips to and from El Paso.
Whatever you say.
In the meantime, what I said before still goes. You two, or any of the rest of you men, for that matter, can draw the wages you've got coming to you and ride away anytime you like, with no hard feelings on either side. I don't want anybody working for me who doesn't want to be here.
I'm glad we cleared the air. I reckon there won't be any more problems.
No problems at all. Except figuring out how to spend all the money that all of us are going to make before this is over.
Dusk had settled over the canyon by the time Bo and Scratch finished tending to their horses. When they went into the headquarters building, they found Alfred waiting for them.
The other gentlemen are having drinks. Would you care to join them?
Where am I tired? You reckon we could get something to eat up in our room?
Oh, of course. I'll bring a tray up in just a few minutes. Will beef and beans and tortillas be all right?
Oh, Sonny, you're talking our lingo.
They went up to their room, took off their hats and jackets, but left their gun belts on.
I believe that fella Alfred is sweet on Teresa's sister Rosalinda.
Well, see, I told you that the other night. You reckon we could turn that to our advantage somehow?
I don't know. Alfred seems pretty loyal to Davidson, but maybe he doesn't know all the things that have been going on around here. Maybe he just knows that he doesn't like Davidson taking advantage of Rosalinda like that. We'll have a talk with him and see if we can figure out how much to tell him.
I'll follow your lead. You handle the thinking part better than I do, and that leaves the fighting and loving parts to me.
I like them more anyway.
It wasn't Alfred who stood outside in the hallway with a tray containing several platters of food. It was Rosalinda.
I have brought your supper, senores.
Just put the tray over there on the table. We'd like to talk to you for a minute, senorita.
I must get back downstairs. Senor Davidson will expect me to serve dinner and
then... This won't take long.
If you want a woman, there is a place you can go. One of the buildings is set aside for that, and there are women of the village there who serve the needs of Senor Davidson's men.
You're getting this all wrong, Rosalinda. We know what's been going on here in the valley, and we'd like to put a stop to it.
I do not understand. You work for Senor Davidson, and yet you say that you want to make him stop what he is doing?
That's right. We know about all of it. The riflemen in the bell tower at the church, the women who are forced to prostitute themselves, the men of the village who have to slave in the mine for him.
And we don't like it one little bit.
But how do you know these things? Has he admitted them to you?
He didn't have to. We saw some of the signs ourselves, and then we talked to your sister.
My sister?
Teresa. She was with the bandits who ambushed the wagons and tried to steal the gold on its way to El Paso.
She was hurt? I heard there was shooting.
She's fine. We took her to El Paso with us and left her in a safe place. She'll be all right there until we've had a chance to put things right here in the valley.
Rosalinda threw herself at Bo, wrapped her arms around his neck, and buried her face against his chest as she sobbed.
You know what? It'd be all right one of these times if the pretty gal wanted to hug me in gratitude, too.
Bo stood there for a minute, awkwardly patting Rosalinda on the back as her tears continued to dampen the front of his shirt and vest. Finally, he put his hands on her shoulders and gently but firmly moved her back a step so that she wasn't hugging him anymore.
Tell me about it. Tell me about Teresa. For all I knew, she was dead.
She's very much alive. And she's worried about you, too. She knows that Davidson is forcing you to work here.
She is with the men who escaped from the valley? The ones Señor Davidson calls bandits, even though they fight only for our freedom.
That's right. And I'm afraid I got some bad news there. Several of those young men were killed when they ambushed the wagons and tried to steal the ore. Only a few were left alive, and they were running away last time we saw them.
They have given up the fight? This cannot be.
Well, they know now that Davidson's brought in some real fighting men and not just a bunch of run-of-the-mill hard cases. They probably feel like they can't stand up to him no more.
But they must! Someone has to fight! Otherwise, he will continue making slaves of us, working us to death, killing the ones who defy him, until either all the gold is gone or all the people of the valley are.
Somebody is going to fight. Scratch and me. And when the time is right, anybody we can get to stand with us.
You would do that? You would lead us in a battle against Señor Davidson and his killers?
If it comes to that, yes. We'd like to try to find some way to deal with him without getting a lot of innocent people hurt or killed, though.
You cannot. The only way a man like that gives up his power is when he is dead. You will have to kill Señor Davidson in order to defeat him. And you cannot kill him without others sacrificing their lives.
Maybe not, but we intend to try.
How can I believe you? You work for Señor Davidson.
Not anymore, although he still thinks we do.
We done quit. He just don't know it yet.
If you'll help us, you can see for yourself that we intend to help your people.
What can I do? I have no power. I cannot even save myself.
Do you ever talk to any of the others who are forced to work for Davidson?
Sometimes. Most of the time I stay here so that I can serve him however he wishes. But once a week or so he allows me to go see my mother and father in the village. They are old. Too old to work in the mine or in the house of the women.
He lets you go there alone?
No. Someone always goes with me. Alfred sometimes, or one of the other men.
Alfred is very fond of you.
I know. And I am fond of him as well. There is nothing we can do about it.
Would he help us if you asked him to?
You mean, would he betray Señor Davidson? I do not know. He has worked for Señor Davidson for several years, since well before they came to San Ramon.
Does he know everything that's been going on? It seems to me like it wouldn't sit well with a decent young fellow like that, the way Davidson treats folks around here.
He does not like it. I know this from the look on his face when one of the men is punished, or when a new woman is brought from the village and taken sobbing into the house. But you have seen Alfred. He is not like the other men who work for Señor Davidson. He is kind when he can be. And he is not the sort of man who uses a gun or his fists.
He's not a hard case like us, in other words.
I mean no offense.
None taken, Señorita. You're only speaking the truth. We don't want him to pick up a gun and start shooting, although it might come to that sooner or later. Like you said, it's mighty hard to get rid of a tyrant without at least a little bloodshed along the way.
You speak to a Mexican, Señor Creel. We know all about tyrants and bloodshed.
Yeah, I recollect a fellow named Sandy Annie.
What we want from Alfred is information about things that Davidson may be planning. Also, he could tell us exactly how many men Davidson has working for him. The foreman, I mean, not the men from the village who are being forced to work in the mine. As well as things like where the extra guns and ammunition are kept.
But if you ask him these things, he will know that you are plotting against Señor Davidson. Alfred is very smart.
That's why I reckon it would be better if you were to ask him instead of one of us.
You want me to spy for you?
For your people, actually. And when you see your parents the next time, tell them that things are going to change around here. Tell them to spread the word, but to be careful about it. They should speak only to people they're sure they can trust. But when the time comes to fight, if it does, they'll know they're not alone. They'll know they got a chance if they all stand together.
I can do these things. If nothing else, it will give the people hope. And that is something they have not had for a very long time. I must get back downstairs. Alfred will wonder what is taking me so long.
All right. Keep your courage up. Your sister has plenty of it, that's for sure.
Teresa was always bold. Too bold for her own good sometimes. Thank you for helping her. And for what you intend to do for my people. And thank you as well, Señor Morton.
Now that's more like it.
The next few days passed peacefully, at least for the men who were in power in the valley. Bo and Scratch didn't figure things were all that peaceful for the men being forced to swing pick and shovel in the mine tunnel for 14 to 16 hours at a stretch, or for the women who had to endure the bestial grunting of Davidson's men when they were taken against their will. For now, though, the Texans had to bide their time. Several times during that interval, Rosalinda found opportunities to speak to one or both of them privately and pass along what she had found out from Alfred. Davidson had no plans that Alfred knew of except to continue working the mine, sending the gold ore to El Paso, and then shipping it out from there by train. There were 14 supervisors, or foremen, at the moment, plus the 6 hired guns, giving Davidson a total of 20 men to do his bidding. Of course, that number included Bo and Scratch, but even without them, Davidson's forces were large enough to control the people of the valley, who had always been peaceful farmers, not gun hands or fighters of any type. It didn't help matters that Davidson and his men had confiscated all the weapons in the valley when they took over. That hadn't amounted to much. A few old single-shot rifles, some rusty pistols, knives, and machetes more suited for work than fighting. But losing them had meant that the people had nothing with which to fight back except their bare hands. It was no wonder that Davidson had been able to seize power and hang on to it with relative ease. The bandits going after his gold shipments had really been his only problem. As for the extra guns and ammunition belonging to Davidson's men, those were stored in the bunkhouse used by the supervisors. If the people of the valley were ever going to be able to fight back, it would sure help if they could get their hands on those weapons, Bo thought, after Rosalinda told him and Scratch about the guns. There was one more somewhat puzzling item that Rosalinda reported. Those 2 long crates that Davidson had brought back from El Paso on the pack mules were still unopened in the supply shed. Davidson had said that they contained mining equipment, but if so, it wasn't being put to use. Not only that, but he had instructed his men to leave the crates alone. The Englishman, Lancaster, was the only one who was allowed to touch them. That convinced Bo that whatever was in the crates, it wasn't intended for mining. He decided to try to find out more. For that reason, when Bo saw Lancaster, Hanson, and Douglas playing cards one evening, he decided to join the game.
Poker's better with 4 than 3. Mind if I join you?
Not at all, old boy. By all means.
Bo sat down, played a couple of hands, and lost both, and joined in the casual conversation going on around the table.
You mentioned you were in the British Army, didn't you?
That's right. Posted in India. I left the service a few years ago and decided to see some of the world. I landed here in your American West, not all that different in many respects from India and Pakistan and Afghanistan. You have your Red Indians and desperados instead of the Sikhs and the sort of hill bandits we dealt with over there. But I must say, I feel almost as much at home here as I did in the Khyber.
What'd you do in the army?
I was a machine gunner. The Gardner, you know. A refinement of your country's Gatling gun.
Don't think I've heard of it.
It has 2 barrels that fire in an alternating pattern, rather than the 6 revolving barrels of a Gatling gun. But the feed system is superior, in my opinion, and allows for just as great a rate of fire, if not better. In tests, I've personally seen the Gardner fire up to 10,000 rounds in a little more than 20 minutes.
That's a lot of lead to sling an atom on a time.
There's a reason the sun never sets on the British Empire, my friend. In addition to our indomitable spirit, we usually have the greater firepower in any battle as well.
I'd like to see one of those Gardner guns in action sometime.
Perhaps you shall have that chance someday.
Later, Bo told Scratch what he had found out.
Damn, I've seen them Gatling guns at work, and so have you, Bo. If that Gardner gun of Lancaster spits out even more rounds than a Gatling, these poor folks won't stand a chance against it.
That's why we can't take a chance on letting Lancaster put it to work. If trouble comes, I'm gonna knock out the machine gun first. You go after that hombre in the bell tower.
Well, that'll go a long way toward evening out the odds. When do we make our move?
I don't know yet. But soon, I hope. So the folks here don't have to put up with being enslaved for any longer than necessary.
Bo figured there still had to be some among the villagers who would be willing to fight. Those were the men he needed to talk to, and he decided that he would ask Rosalinda to try to get word to them through her parents. Somehow, Bo and Scratch needed to get together with the villagers they could count on and start discussing some plans. That was as far as he had gotten in his thinking by the next night, when a sudden rattle of gunfire from somewhere in the canyon made Davidson and his men boil out of the headquarters building to see what was going on. Bo and Scratch had no choice but to go with them, since they were still pretending to be loyal to Davidson.
It's coming from the shed where the blasting powder's stored.
No shit.
Damn it, don't just stand there. Go find out what's happening.
I don't much cotton to being around blasting powder.
If you want to keep your job, you'd better get moving.
Luckily, the shooting eased off as the six hired gunmen approached the powder shed. Guards were normally posted at the shed, so Skinner called out.
Hey, up there. What the hell's the shooting all about?
We caught somebody sneaking around.
The two men came closer, prodding a stumbling figure ahead of them at gunpoint.
Ha ha! Look what we grabbed!
The second man gave the captive a hard shove. The prisoner tripped and fell, sprawling on the rocky ground. The moon had risen, and enough of its silvery glow penetrated the canyon for Bo, Scratch, and the others to be able to see the captive's face as she lifted her head and glared up at them. Bo and Scratch tensed in surprise and alarm. The person the guards had caught sneaking around the powder shed was none other than Teresa Volcase. Teresa was dressed in range clothes, as usual, and had a gun belt strapped around her waist. The holster was empty at the moment.
Damn little minx is gonna blow up the powder shed. She had matches and some fuses on her when we got hold of her.
We saw her before she could get the fuse going. She ducked behind some rocks and started shooting at us. I was able to trade shots with her while Rockwell ears slipped around and got behind her.
Oh, she put up a hell of a fight when I jumped her. I thought for a second I was going to have to wallop her with my gun just to get her to settle down.
Who the hell is she?
Well, I don't know. Some greaser bitch, that's all I can tell you. But she's going to be sorry she tried to blow up the boss's blasting powder. Oh, you could be sure of that.
Bring her along.
Before any of the other men could move, Bo and Scratch stepped forward, each of them reaching down to grasp one of Teresa's arms. They lifted her to her feet, being none too gentle about it.
All right, senorita. You're going to see the boss man. Do you habla inglés?
I speak your gringo tongue. And if you do not let me go, you will be sorry.
I reckon you're confused. We're the ones who've got you, not the other way around.
Teresa struggled in the grip of the two Texans, but they didn't ease their holds on her. This had to look real, for all their sakes. As they drew closer to the headquarters building, Davidson stepped forward with a lantern that someone had brought out to him. He lifted it so that its yellow glow fell over the men and their prisoner, and he realized that the captive was a woman.
What the hell?
Hey, we caught her trying to blow up the powder shed, boss. When we spooked her, she started shooting at us.
Oh, good job, good job. Who are you?
Teresa spat in his face. Davidson's free hand flashed up and cracked across her cheek in a hard slap that rocked her head to the side. She might have been knocked off her feet if the Texans hadn't been holding her arms.
You've got spirit, senorita, I'll give you that. And more courage than most of your countrymen. There's something familiar about you. Have we met? You're a stubborn one, ain't you?
Give her to us, boss. We'll work that stubbornness out of her.
Sorry, you can't have her. At least not yet. I'm gonna take care of this one myself. Take her over to the corral and tie her wrist to the top rail.
Well, now, boss, I ain't so sure that...
Do what I said, Morton. It's time that you see. It's time everyone around here sees that I won't be trifled with. Do it!
Bo and Scratch started toward the corral with Teresa.
When you get a chance, run into the barn and find a horse. You'll have to ride bareback. Scratch and I will cover your escape.
Davidson will kill you.
We'll take our chances. We can't stand by and let him go ahead with whatever he's got planned for you.
Alfred!
Yes, sir.
Go inside and get my whip.
Sir...
Do what I told you, Alfred. Hold this lantern, Lancaster. Raise it good and high so I can see what I'm doing.
You're the boss, as you Americans say.
And don't you forget it.
Bo and Scratch had reached the corral fence. A coiled lariat hung on one of the posts. Bo took it down and used his Barlow knife to cut a couple of short lengths from it.
We'll tie your wrists so that you can slip right out of the bonds.
No, let him do his worst. I can't stand it.
Maybe you can, Senorita, but I don't reckon we can.
They had steered Teresa toward the big gate, and in fact it was to the gate that they loosely tied her wrists after lifting her arms over her head. When Bo lowered his hand, he brushed it against the latch, seemingly accidentally, and knocked it open.
Rip her shirt off!
Bo and Scratch looked back at him. Alfred had brought him a long bullwhip, and with a flick of his wrist, Davidson sent the length of it snaking out. Another flick made it coil at his feet and resemble a serpent even more.
This don't sit all that well with me, boss.
Shut up! Whatever Mr. Davidson's got in mind, I want to watch it.
It'll be entertaining, I can promise you that. I'm gonna flay the skin right off her naked back. And the rest of you can have her, if you still want her. You still haven't torn her shirt off! Strip her, damn you, and do it now!
When I shove the gate open, pull your hands loose and get in the barn as fast as you can.
Señor Creel, I am sorry.
No time for that now. Go!
As the gate swung open and Teresa ran into the barn, the Texans whirled toward Davidson and the other men. Bo's Colt and Scratch's twin Remingtons were out and leveled before anybody else had a chance to slap leather.
Nobody move. We'll kill the first man who reaches for a gun.
Kill him! Shoot them both and stop the girl!
Better think about it. Scratch will kill the first man who tries it. I'll kill you, Davidson.
I'll have both your hides for this, you... you!
Bo heard hoofbeats and knew that Teresa had managed to get on a horse, open the rear door of the barn, and ride out that way. If she could reach the mouth of the canyon, she could get into the valley and slip away under cover of darkness.
$500 to any man who kills Creel and Morton. No, $1,000
each.
No, but I'll throw in another $1,000 for any man who kills him and brings back the girl. Do it!
Man can't outdraw a gun that's already drawn. Not even me.
$5,000!
Now you're starting to tempt me.
By God, I'll take it!
Hansen lunged to the side, clawing at the gun on his hip as he did so. His revolver had just started to clear leather when the Remington in Scratch's left hand roared. As the .44 round punched into Hansen's beefy torso, Lancaster slung the lantern toward Bo and Scratch. Bo fired at Davidson, as he had promised, but the bullet struck the lantern in midair and shattered it. Flaming kerosene sprayed through the air, lighting up the scene in a hellish glare. Bo ducked away from it, and as he did, he saw Davidson lash out with the whip. Its weighted tip leaped out toward Bo.
Ah!
The whip bit deeply into Bo's hand like the snake it resembled and made Bo drop the Colt. Smoke and flame erupted from the muzzles of Scratch's Remingtons.
Head for the barn! I'll cover you!
Lancaster and Douglas had their guns out by now and were blazing away, firing through the flames that still rose from the spilled kerosene. Bo felt the wind grip of a slug past his ear as he darted toward the barn. Ah! Then Scratch went to one knee, and Bo knew he couldn't run out on his trail partner. He wheeled around and saw that Scratch had dropped his left-hand gun. That hand was now pressed to Scratch's side, with crimson streams welling between the fingers. Bo dived for the fallen Remington and scooped it up with his left hand. He knelt beside Scratch as the gun bucked against his palm.
Looks like this is the end of the trail, old-timer.
Yeah, I wish we could have helped those folks.
That was when a blow like a giant fist slammed against the side of Bo's head, knocking him backward. He didn't know it when he hit the sandy ground in front of the open corral gate. Black oblivion had already claimed him. Bo would have bet that he'd never wake up again. But after an unknowable time, the darkness that surrounded him slowly began to fade. Like a long night giving way to dawn, awareness seeped back into his brain. Consciousness brought with it thundering pain, and that dull, aching throb was welcome because it meant that he was still alive. If Bo had been dead, he wouldn't feel anything. The pain in his head wasn't the only one. Agony gripped his arms and shoulders too, and every time he took a breath, what felt like sharp knives jabbed him somewhere inside. Gradually, he figured out that his arms were fastened somehow above his head, and he was hanging from them with all his weight being borne by his wrists. The darkness continued to fade, and as it did so, a blindingly powerful light replaced it. Bo squeezed his eyelids shut as hard as he could, but the light grew more and more intense despite his efforts. The light increased the pain in his head as well, until finally it was so bad he thought he couldn't stand it any longer.
Bo! Bo!
Oh, thank God you're alive, old son.
Even though it pained him considerably to do so, Bo forced his eyes open, wincing as the bright light struck them with even more force. He blinked rapidly as his vision tried to adjust. After what seemed like an eternity of eye-searing brilliance, Bo was able to see well enough to tell that he was still in Cutthroat Canyon. Sharp, scraping pains in his back as his body shifted slightly told him that he was hanging against the canyon's rocky wall. Even though the movement made the world spin crazily around him, he turned his head toward the sound of Scratch's voice.
Are you all right, Bo? Oh, God, it's a hell of a dumb question, ain't it?
Bo's sight was still blurry, but he could see well enough to make out his friend and partner. Scratch hung by his arms, too. His wrists were tied together with rope, and that rope was looped over a spike of some sort that had been hammered into the canyon wall. Scratch's bare feet dangled about 10 inches off the ground. Scratch wore only his trousers. He had been stripped to the waist, and mottled bruises from a terrible beating covered his torso. His face was a mass of bruises and dried blood. Blood that had flowed from a wound of some sort had caked into a dark brown patch on his left side. Bo recalled that Scratch had been shot during the fight with Davidson's men in front of the corral. From the looks of the injury, the bullet had plowed a furrow in Scratch's side, not a serious wound other than the loss of blood.
You look like hell.
Yeah, well, I reckon I could say the same thing about you.
I take it I'm hung up like a side of beef, too.
Oh, yeah. They wailed on us good and proper, then hung us up here to cook in the sun.
It feels like it's working. Teresa?
She got away. I heard him talking about it. Davidson sent Lancaster and Douglas to look for her, but I got my doubts about him being able to find her.
Was that wounded?
Oh, yeah. Slug nicked you on the side of the head.
You bled like a stuck pig, too. I thought you were goner for sure. Reckon it just knocked you out, though. Another inch to the left, and your brains have been splattered all over that corral fence.
You ought to see yourself. You got so much dried blood on your face, you look like something out of a nightmare.
You're not what I call pretty as a picture yourself. Where are we?
Up the canyon from the mine. Not far from the powder shed Teresa tried to blow up. Say, what do you think made that gal come back down here instead of staying at Luce's place like we told her to?
Old as I am, I still haven't lived long enough yet to figure out how a woman thinks. My guess is she got tired of waiting. Or she just felt like it was her fight too and she had to do something about it. Or maybe something happened at Luce's to get her upset and make her leave. We'll have to find her and ask her about it when we get loose from here.
Oh, yeah. Well, you sound pretty sure we ain't gonna just hang here until we die.
Damn right we ain't. We'll get out of this somehow.
That day was an eternity long. But thankfully, Davidson had miscalculated when he told his men where to hang Bo and Scratch on the canyon wall. By the afternoon, when the sun was at its hottest, the blazing orb had moved far enough west in the sky so that the canyon itself gave the Texans a little shade. Midday had been the worst, with the sun beating down fiercely from directly overhead. The heat had been helpful in a way, though, because it had numbed some of their other aches and pains. Bo dozed off from time to time, even though he didn't want to, and fought against it. In the back of his mind lurked the fear that if he went to sleep, he might not ever wake up again. He couldn't tip his head back far enough to see his own wrists, but he had studied the way Scratch was tied and hung from the spike. The only way they would get down was if someone cut them down, and that seemed mighty unlikely to happen. Bo's mouth felt like it was filled with cotton. In fact, it seemed like all the moisture in his body had been leached out by the sun. His tongue swelled, filling his mouth until it threatened to choke him. If they could make it until nightfall, he told himself, things would get better. The air cooled off considerably at night in these parts, and that would help soothe their blistered skin. But another day like this would kill them. Bo had absolutely no doubt about that.
You know if you killed Hanson when you shot him?
Yeah, he crossed the divide. Damn shame, too. Sort of like the big Scandinavian. He wasn't such a bad hombre for a hired gun. I wish we hadn't wound up on opposite sides. Not much you can do about it when a fella starts shooting at you, though. You gotta shoot back. At least I do.
Yeah, me too. Like you say, it's a shame. What about Skinner, Lancaster, and Douglas?
They all come through the fight without getting ventilated. Skinner took particular delight in kicking the hell out of both of us, and Davidson told his men to work us over before we were strung up here.
Lancaster and Douglas get in on that?
No, it was the hombres who run the mine for Davidson, along with Skinner.
Remember we talked about Lancaster's Gardner gun?
Yeah, just what Davidson needs. A newfangled way to run roughshod over these poor folks.
If we could get our hands on it.
Right after we get loose from here, you mean?
Yeah.
You know what? If you keep studying on it, Bo, I really do believe you'll come up with a way to do it.
More time dragged by. Shadows covered the whole wall of the canyon now, although the air was still stiflingly hot. Bo's hands and arms were completely numb by now, which was a relief in a way, because he could no longer feel it where the rope had chafed and bloodied his wrists. He dozed again, and when he jerked awake, he saw two people coming along the canyon floor toward him and Scratch. Bo glanced over at his partner, saw that Scratch's head lolled forward loosely on his neck. For a terrible second, Bo thought that his old friend had died, but then he saw the faint movement of Scratch's chest that told him the silver-haired Texan still lived.
Scratch! Scratch, wake up! Somebody's coming.
They were close enough now for Bo to make out who they were. Rosalinda came first. Trailing behind her was Alfred, who carried a bucket with a long-handled dipper in it.
Is that Teresa?
No, it's Rosalinda and Alfred.
Oh, I thought maybe Teresa come back to let us loose.
Senor Creel, Senor Morton, I am so sorry.
Not your fault, Senorita.
But if you had not been trying to help me and the people of the valley...
Oh, shoot. Don't worry about it. We just got us a natural dislike for varmints like Davidson. No offense, Alfred.
For God's sake, don't apologize to me. It's the man I work for who's responsible for the terrible things that have happened to you. I swear, he wasn't always that way. The gold... changed him somehow. He used to just speculate in mining claims, but then he heard about Don Alviso's mine somehow. We came down here to look it over, and when Mr. Davidson saw the quality of the ore, but even then, I never dreamed he would...
Murder Don Alviso? Take over the mine for himself?
I tried to tell myself at first that it must have been an accident when the gun went off. I didn't think Mr. Davidson would do such a thing. But then I saw how he began to treat people around here. The sort of men he brought in to run things for him. I hoped it wasn't as bad as it looked.
You know, I'm sure you did, son, and it ain't that I'm not sympathetic. But if that's water in that bucket, I'd be powerful obliged if I could have some.
Oh, Lord, of course.
Alfred pulled the dipper full of water out of the bucket and raised it to Scratch's mouth. Even though it was awkward, Scratch gulped down as much as he could. Bo was next. And he didn't think anything had ever tasted sweeter than the water that spilled from the dipper into his mouth.
What's Davidson gonna do with us?
I don't really know. He told me to bring you some water so that you wouldn't die too fast. Maybe he'll let you go later.
Oh, come on, you know better than that, son. He's gonna leave us out here and let the sun bake us again tomorrow. We'll be dead before the day's over.
Why did Teresa have to come back? Why?
You told Alfred about her?
Si, I told him everything. All about how you said you were going to try to help me and my people. I did not think it mattered now if he knew the truth.
I don't reckon it does. What do you say, Alfred? Now that you know what's going on, are you gonna keep helping that polecat?
There's nothing I can do.
You could cut us loose.
No, I can't. Mr. Davidson told that man Skinner to keep an eye on us while we brought you the water. He told Skinner that if we did anything besides give you the water, if we tried to help you in any way, Skinner was to shoot me, and then Rosalinda would be sent to the brothel. He has a pair of field glasses, and he's been watching us. I can feel his eyes following us like...
A snake's?
Exactly.
How about Lancaster and Douglas?
Mr. Davidson's already talked to them. He knows they're upset about what's happened, but he promised them a bonus if they go along with what he's doing to you, and they're going to take it.
Yeah, that ain't surprising. Hombres like that, Tenero means more to him than anything else.
It looks like there's nothing you can do without risking your life, Alfred. And I reckon Rosalinda here's gonna need you to look out for her. So that's what you need to do. Don't worry about scratching me.
If there was any way I could help, I'd...
No, you run along. But you might give us a little more of that water before you go, though.
Of course.
Alfred used the dipper to give each of them another drink. Then he and Rosalinda headed back down the canyon toward the mine, both of them glancing back from time to time.
You reckon a boy's gonna do the right thing?
I don't know. I don't know what to hope for. Alfred's no fighter. If he tries to help us, he's liable to just get himself killed. Might be better in the long run for him and Rosalinda if he just turned his back on the whole thing.
No, you don't believe that. It'll eat away at him the rest of his life if he does.
Yeah, you're probably right about that.
They fell silent again. Exhaustion caught up to Beau a while after that, and he drifted off to sleep again. When he awoke, darkness had descended once more over Cutthroat Canyon. With it had come a chill. During the heat of the day, Beau had looked forward to cooling off, but now it quickly became a bone-numbing cold that settled into him. His teeth began to chatter. That was when something hit him on the head. It felt like a pebble, and it was followed by several more tiny rocks that struck Beau's head and shoulders as they fell, along with some dust and grit that drifted into his eyes and made him blink. Beau heard a faint scraping sound above him. He twisted his head as far as he could in an attempt to look up the canyon wall. Stars were visible against the ebony sky, but then some of them were blotted out by a moving patch of darkness.
Scratch, Scratch, wake up! Somebody's climbing down into the canyon.
What? What the hell?
Beau watched as the shadowy form lowered itself toward them. The canyon walls were too sheer for anybody short of an ape to climb them, so whoever it was had to be using a rope to let themselves down. Maybe it was an ape, Beau thought wildly, as he saw how big the figure was. Feet pushed against the rock face, the shape swung out from it, and then dropped to the ground between them with surprising grace for someone so bulky.
Oh, Señor Beau, Señor Scratch, caramba, tell me that you are alive and we are not too late.
Pepe, what in blazes are you doing here?
Starlight penetrated the canyon and winked on the blade of the knife the massive bodyguard pulled from behind his belt. He reached up with a long arm and started sawing through the rope that bound Beau's wrists to the spike in the canyon wall.
Oh, thanks be to El Señor Dios that you are still alive. There will be time for explanations later, once you and Señor Scratch are safe.
Pepe put his left arm around Beau's waist and held him up easily as the rope parted. Gently, he lowered Beau to the ground and finished the job of freeing the Texan's wrists. Then, as Beau sat slumped at the base of the canyon wall, leaning against it, Pepe went to work freeing Scratch. A million tiny knives stabbed into Beau's shoulders, arms, and hands as the blood began to flow freely again into the numbed extremities. In its own way, the pain of that was as bad as anything else Beau had experienced in the past 24 hours. He clenched his jaw to keep from groaning in agony and rolled his shoulders in an attempt to speed up the process. He looked down at his hands and tried to clench and unclench the fingers, but the muscles refused to work just yet. Those hands might as well have belonged to someone else for all the good Beau did in trying to control them. Pepe lowered Scratch to the ground beside him.
Gracious amigo. You know, if you weren't such an ugly old varmint, Pepe, I reckon I'd kiss you right about now.
Oh, save your kisses for Luz, Señor Scratch. I think she will appreciate them much more than me.
Well, I'll settle for saying thanks then.
I never expected to see you here, Pepe.
I will tell you about it later. Are the guards nearby?
There haven't been any guards out here all day. I reckon Davidson figured we were in such bad shape and in such bad fix that he didn't need to post any.
Then he will be very surprised in the morning when he finds that you are gone, eh?
Very.
How do you feel? Your arms are not as numb, yes?
That's right.
Can you climb?
I don't know about that. I reckon it might be a little too much right now.
That is what we thought. I will tie the rope around you and loose, and Teresa can pull you up.
Teresa is with you?
Oh, see, it was she who persuaded us that we should come down here from El Paso and try to help you drive that hombre Davison out of the valley.
I'm not sure a couple of women can lift me.
Let me help you stand.
Pepe helped Bo to his feet and passed the rope under his arms, knotting it in front of his chest.
Don't worry. Luz is as strong as an ox. And if you tell her I said so, I will deny it to my dying breath.
Don't worry, I won't say anything.
When the rope had been made fast around him, Pepe gave it a couple of tugs. Bo felt the slack go out of it. Pepe made a stirrup out of his hands, and Bo put a bare foot in it and stepped up. The rope held most of his weight as he began to walk up the canyon wall. Bo was never quite sure where he found the strength to do that, but he managed to reach the top a few minutes later. Luz and Teresa were waiting for him, as Pepe had promised. They reached out to grasp his arms and pull him onto a ledge. Bo sprawled out on it, his chest heaving. He stayed there, catching his breath for only a couple of seconds, though, before he sat up and started fumbling with the knot that held the rope. Scratch was still down there. His fingers still didn't want to work right. Teresa knelt in front of him.
Let me.
She pulled at the knot and had it untied in moments. She dropped the rope back down over the rim. The other end was tied around Luce's waist, Bo noticed. She wore trousers and a man's shirt like Teresa. The top button was unbuttoned so that the upper halves of her big breast spilled out of the shirt. While Bo sat there and rested, Teresa and Luz hauled Scratch up out of the canyon. Then they dropped the rope down to Pepe again, and the bodyguard scrambled up it like the ape he had reminded Bo of earlier. He coiled the rope after Luz untied it from around her waist.
I am sorry we could not bring the horses up here. We will have to walk out.
Well, don't worry about that. It'll feel mighty good to be on our feet again, I reckon, after dangling like that all day.
Pepe helped them up, and when they proved to be unsteady, he got between them and looped an arm around each of them. Their progress was slow, but steady, as they followed Teresa off the ledge and onto a narrow, winding trail that twisted upward into the mountains. Luz brought up the rear, carrying a Winchester.
When we get higher up, this trail will lead to another that goes down into the valley. We left the horses there.
What about Davidson's man in the bell tower?
He cannot see in the darkness. As long as we are in hiding before daylight, we will be safe from his eyes. And he's gone.
Yeah, we've never gotten much to hide now. But I reckon under the circumstances, it ain't such a bad idea.
You are in no shape to fight a battle right now. You must rest and recover from what Davison has done to you. I am sorry you had to endure such torture because of me.
I reckon you had your reasons for doing what you did. And if you'd gotten away with blowing up that shed, it would have done considerable damage to Davidson's operation. At least for a while. We can talk about that later, once we get out of here.
Yeah, and we can start figuring out how we can get our hands on some guns, too. Because I aim to pay another visit to Cutthroat Canyon later on.
Count on it.
The trek out of the mountains took more than an hour and used up all the reserves of strength the Texans had left. And the rocky ground was terribly hard on their bare feet. By the time they reached the horses, Pepe was carrying them more than helping them walk. He lifted each of them onto the back of a horse. Teresa swung up behind Bo, while Pepe rode behind Scratch. Even at a slow walk, they had to hold the Texans on the mounts. Luz followed on a third horse. They took a roundabout route toward San Ramon. Having grown up in the valley, Teresa knew all the trails, both there and in the surrounding mountains and foothills. That was how she had been able to lead Luz and Pepe to the ledge above the canyon.
We must go the rest of the way on foot. Pepe will take the horses back into the hills and hide them.
Bo and Scratch had regained some of their strength during the ride. They were able to dismount with only a little help. Pepe took the reins of the other two horses and set off into the night, while Teresa and Luz led the Texans through the cultivated fields toward the cluster of adobe huts. When they reached the village, Teresa went to the door of one of the huts.
Evangelina!
The door swung open a second later. No light came from inside the hut. All the lamps had been blown out. a young woman in a long skirt and low-cut peasant blouse ushered them inside.
Light the lamp, Enrique.
Flame moved through the darkness, caught the wick in a crude oil lamp. A flickering glow welled up near a white-whiskered old man. Bo saw that they were in a small, spartanly furnished room. A rough-hewn table, a couple of chairs, and a stone fireplace filled up most of the room. Thick curtains hung over the single window. Through an arched doorway, he saw another room with a rope bunk in it. A straw-filled mattress rested on the bunk.
Welcome to my home, senores. Teresa tells me that you are enemies of the man, Davidson. This means you are my amigos.
Bo looked at her in the lamplight, and his jaw tightened. She was a little older than Teresa, but still young and beautiful. At least, she had been beautiful before someone had taken a knife to her and left an ugly red scar down each side of her face. From the looks of the scars, her cheeks had been sliced open down to the bone.
Oh, son.
I know. No man can bear to look at me now save Enrique. And he is, well, not right in the head.
I still think you're pretty, Evangelina. Even after the gringo caught you.
Who did it? Davidson?
The one called Wallace. I thought at first he was nicer than the others who came to me in the place where they took us. But then one night, he grew angry at me when he could not. He became angry and took out his knife and said that no man would ever want me again. He was right about that. And in a way, it was a blessing. Señor Davidson told Gomez, the cabrón who runs the house, to send me away.
Wallace would pay for that.
You bet a hat on it.
You must sit down and rest. I have food and wine. Not much, but whatever I have, I am willing to share.
You know you're taking a big chance by helping us, don't you, Señorita?
I don't care. All that matters to me is striking back against the men who have invaded our home and ruined our lives. From what Teresa tells me, you two are the best chance of doing that.
Evangelina brought Bo and Scratch cups of wine and tortillas and beans. There was a gourd full of clean water from the stream. And Bo and Scratch passed it back and forth, drinking deeply as they finished eating.
We should clean those wounds.
I can do that. I had plenty of experience with my own.
You got any tequila or pulque or mezcal?
Fetch the tequila, Enrique. You are right, Señor Morton. It will help to cleanse the wounds.
Well, yeah, that too.
Bo grimaced as Evangelina used a tequila-soaked rag to wash the blood away from the gash the bullet had left on his head.
Oh, oh!
She did the same with the deep graze on Scratch's side. Then she heated water in a pot over a small fire in the fireplace and pressed hot, damp compresses to the bruises and scrapes on their torsos. They also soaked their bruised, lacerated feet in pans of hot water. A great weariness stole over Bo as this was going on. He knew he wasn't going to be able to stay awake much longer.
Somebody better stand guard all the time. Davidson's liable to send some men to search the village tomorrow when he finds out we're gone. Wake us before dawn, and Scratch and I will slip out of here so they won't find us. We don't want to bring any trouble down on your friend's head.
Let us worry about that.
Bo would have argued, but he was too blasted tired to do so. He dozed off, not knowing where or when he would wake up, but too far gone to do anything about it. Cool darkness surrounded Bo when awareness came back to him again. He opened his eyes. He was lying on something soft. And when he shifted a little, it rustled underneath him. A straw-filled mattress like the one he had seen in Evangelina's bedroom, he decided. But he wasn't on that bunk. Some sort of roof was fairly close overhead, so that he couldn't stand up without banging his head on the planks. He could see that much because faint light filtered down to wherever he was through cracks between the boards. Scratch was sleeping on another mattress beside him. Under the mattresses was a hard-packed dirt floor, and the walls of the chamber were made of stone. They were in some sort of underground room, Bo realized, a hidey hole underneath one of the huts in the village, probably Evangelina's. And it was day now, because the light coming through the cracks was sunlight, not the flickering glow of the oil lamp.
We're looking for a couple of strangers. Gringos.
Bo heard the mutter of voices overhead and opened his mouth to call out to whoever was up there and let them know he was awake. He stopped without saying anything, though. Instead, he pushed himself up on an elbow, reached over, and clamped a hand over Scratch's mouth. The silver-haired Texan jerked away and started to bolt upright, but Bo's other hand on his shoulder held him down. When he saw awareness come into Scratch's eyes, he took his hands away and held a finger to his lips in a signal for silence. Someone had wrapped bandages around Scratch's midsection where the bullet had grazed him. Bo put a hand to his head and felt a bandage there as well. He sat up. There was room in the hiding place for that, and Scratch did likewise. Both men listened intently, trying to make out what was being said above them.
If you see any sign of those two, you damn well better let us know, or you'll be sorry.
Don't worry, senor. We will come to the mine immediately and tell you.
Bo had figured out that it was the next morning now, and Davidson's men had come to the village to search for him and Scratch, just as he thought they would. The search had reached Evangelina's hut. It hadn't taken long, though, for the men to see that no one was there except the scarred young woman and that somewhat addle-pated old man. Bo and Scratch breathed a little easier after the footsteps clomped out, but they didn't relax until part of the floor above them rose, forming a trap door. More light flooded into the hidden chamber, making both men narrow their eyes against its brightness.
You can come out now. Davidson's men are gone.
Bo and Scratch stood up, hoisted themselves onto the edge of the opening in the floor, and climbed out. They saw that they were inside Evangelina's bedroom. A woven rug had covered one side of the trapdoor, the other side of which was flush with a wall. Unless someone knew the opening was there, they wouldn't spot it without a thorough search. Obviously, Davidson's men hadn't been that diligent. Enrique stood to one side, grinning as usual. He wore a serape today, and one hand came out from underneath the coarsely woven cloak, holding an ancient cap-and-ball pistol. Evangelina gently took the heavy revolver out of his gnarled hand.
I don't need to shoot anyone, Evangelina.
No shooting. If they had found the trapdoor, Enrique was going to kill them. The shots would have brought the rest of Davidson's men, but at least you would have had their guns to make a fight of it.
I'm glad it didn't come to that. I thought Davidson confiscated all the guns in the valley, though.
His men missed a few that our people were able to hide, like this one. But we have only a handful and a limited amount of ammunition. Not enough to stand up to Davidson and his men. Not enough cojones either, when it comes to that.
Where are Teresa and Luz?
They went into the hills before dawn to hide with Pepe during the day. They will be back tonight. In the meantime, Teresa told me to keep you safe and let you rest. Would you like something to eat?
Yes, ma'am, we surely would.
Yeah, my backbone's tickling my belly button.
Evangelina heated a pot of stew filled with savory wild onions and chunks of goat meat. Bo and Scratch wolfed down bowls of the stuff and cleaned up the last drops with pieces of tortilla.
I have to go work in the fields. It will be better if you get back in a hidden space under my bedroom. Cooler there during the heat of the day, too.
Sounds good to us. How did you happen to have a hiding place like that, anyway?
A number of the houses in the village have them, but Davidson and his men do not know that. We used them to store food, goat milk, things like that.
The two men climbed back into the underground room, taking a gourd of water and some tortillas with them, and Evangelina left Enrique's old hog leg with them.
I think you could probably make better use of it than him if the need arose. He will come with me to the fields, so no one should disturb you.
Evangelina lowered the trapdoor into place.
You know, one of us ought to stay awake, I reckon, just in case somebody comes snooping around.
Good idea. You can sleep first if you want to.
No, I'm wide awake. You're the one who got shot in the head. You probably need more rest.
You lost more blood.
I ain't so sure about that. Head wounds bleed like the devil.
Bo shrugged and rolled onto his side. He was asleep within minutes. They spent the rest of the day like that, alternately dozing and staying awake. Hiding out provided the battered drifters healing time they sorely needed.